Hey, bestie. Welcome back to the 20-something Teenage Girl podcast. I'm your host, Marin. Now, normally on this podcast, we like to talk about spirituality and self-development and being in your 20s and all this good shit. But today, I want to do something unproductive, okay? I have been in the worst depressive episode of my life. The only thing that's keeping me going right now is a hyperfixation on the Hunger Games and the fact that they just released the prequel movie. So you're going to get an incredibly long episode where I'm going to do a deep dive into the Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes. We're going to be talking about the plot. We're going to talk about the book. We're going to talk about the movie. I'm going to give you an analysis of both. We're going to compare and contrast them. We're going to talk character development, costume design, cinematography, writing styles, all the nerd things. So if you are like me and you are interested in the Hunger Games at all, even better if you're also an English and film nerd, I think you will enjoy this. So without further ado, let's hop right... That was so aggressive. Without further ado, let's hop into a summary of the Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes. Before I begin, though, I do just want to say, if you're listening to this on a streaming platform in podcast format, I'd actually highly recommend that you switch to the video mode. I have video on Spotify, I believe on a few other podcast platforms, but if you're not seeing a video pop up and you, for some reason, you want to see my web of chaos, go ahead, go to my YouTube channel. It will be linked down below. I'll wait for you. Grab a beverage, grab a snack, go to the bathroom. I don't know, and let's talk about the Hunger Games. I also just want to preface by saying this isn't alcohol. This is Diet Coke, but I need something in both hands while I'm standing in order to not feel uncomfortable. So this brings me to introduce to you my very detailed web of all of the characters and their connections. This took me a long time. My printer broke. That's why you get to see what my handwriting looks like. Let me first introduce to you our star pupil, Coriolanus.
Are you?
I know what you're thinking. Marin, he has anus on the end of his name. Yeah, just so you know, so does another character, Sejanus. I thought there was like multiple anuses in this cast. When I actually look at it, I think there's only two anuses. Coriolanus is the son of Crassus Snow and his mother, who I don't think is named, so I just wrote Mrs. Snow. Crassus is from a very powerful family in the capital. During the rebel war on the capital, Crassus and his wife put all of their investments into District 13, which we know was nuked. So, oh, I have a death pen. Where's my death pen? I have a pen. Coriolanus' dad, I drew on the wall. This is not my wall. Crassus dies in the first war against the capital. His mother dies in childbirth. So this leaves us with the grandmother of Crassus, who Coriolanus and his cousin Tigris call the Grand Mam. So the Grand Mam is in charge of looking over Tigris, who isn't directly related, I mean in a way that they're not brother and sister. Tigris is a little bit older than Coriolanus and basically is the reason why he survived the war, because they had no food, nothing during the war. It's also alluded to that Tigris, trigger warning, probably had to sell her body in order to get them food. To which Coriolanus says, I believe at least once or twice, that he's disgusted by that fact and refuses to believe that the Snows have fallen to that level. So if you remember, Tigris is in Mockingjay. I believe she's in Mockingjay Part 1 in the films. She is a fashion designer for the Capitol. We see the roots begin in this book. Tigris designs clothes for both her and Coriolanus. I believe in the book it's mentioned that she probably has like one dress. Coriolanus has like two shirts, and his one nice shirt is just too small for him, doesn't fit him. So the morning of Coriolanus's school project, which we will get to, where he mentors a tribute for the Hunger Games, Tigress sews him a shirt. I think she like makes the buttons out of the tile in the bathroom. It's mentioned that Coriolanus's shoes are too tight. You get the picture. Coriolanus goes to this very, very, very fancy capital school. The dean of this school, I cannot say this without giggling, his name is Dean Highbottom. And the game maker of these Hunger Games is Dr. Gall, who is a scientist for the school, or I don't fucking know. Wait, no, she's like the leader of the war department. I should say I have the memory of a goldfish, and I actually don't know if I'm summarizing anything accurately. Dr. Gall is super spooky, but we'll get to her later. So Coriolanus goes to school. The outfits, I'm getting ahead of myself, but in the movie, the uniforms for their school are so cunty slay. It is a red blazer, like a red pleated skirt over red pants and like a white shirt. A lot of people didn't like this. Oh my God, I loved it. Like, give me kilt, give me capital fashion, but in the 30s, I'm obsessed. So the Hunger Games are new. We're in the 10th Hunger Games. They were created by Dean Highbottom. But at this point in time, the games are very juvenile compared to what we're used to. Either it was the first year that they decided to have mentors, or it was the first year that they decided to give students of the university a chance to mentor the tributes. So Coriolanus, of course, falls into this group of students that's going to be mentoring, along with his friend Sejanus, Arachne, and Clementia. There's some other capital students, but these are pretty much the only ones that are going to come into play later. Sejanus is also a very important character. So he is from District 2. His parents are Strabo, and I don't believe we hear his mom's name. He calls her Ma. Strabo bought his way into the capital. I forgot exactly how, but this really pisses Coriolanus off, who is capital born, was very classist, and who believes everyone from the district is scum. And while Coriolanus has nothing, Sejanus, who is from the districts, has everything. While Coriolanus is actually pretty nice to Sejanus, and in the movie it would look like they were friends, in the book, Coriolanus is constantly talking about how much he despises him for this reason, purely classism. And just as a brief introduction, Arachne Crane, I believe is her last name. I'm forgetting Clementia's last name. These are just two of his other classmates. I believe he mentions that he actually does like Clementia, but he says over and over again that Arachne is a cunt. So Dean Highbottom and Dr. Gall assign all of our university besties their tributes. The list is here. We have District 1, Velverine, and Fawcett. Get ready for these names, okay? Number 2, Sabine and Marcus. 3, Tesley and... tell me what that is. Is it Sirk or Kirk? 4, Coral and Mizzen. 5, Sol and High. 6, Ginny and Otto. 7, Lamina and Treach. 8, Bobbin and Wovey. Wovey will come into play later. So will Treach. So will Coral. So will Marcus. 9, we have Sheaf and Panlo. 10, we have Brandy and Tanner. 11, we have Dill and Reaper. Dill and Reaper both come in later. And 12, we have our girl, Lucy Gray Baird. And the boy is Jessup. So Coriolanus is assigned Lucy Gray Baird. Sejanus, on the other hand, is assigned... oh, I should put a connection between them. Sejanus is assigned Marcus from District 2. He's the boy from District 2. What do we know about District 1 and 2, bestie? Sejanus knows Marcus. Because remember, Sejanus is from District 2. And he obviously doesn't want to send one of his classmates to his death. So, he freaks out. Arachne is assigned Brandy. Clementia is assigned Reap. Arachne is assigned Brandy. Let's talk about the bird of the whole show, Miss Lucy Gray Baird. Now I'm gonna be completely honest with you. When I read the book, I really didn't like her. And I just think Number one, internalized misogyny. Number two, I think it's also some projection of insecurities onto her. This is getting too personal. But anyways, I just didn't really like her in my first read. And I think it's those reasons, but I think it's also the Covey and this whole idea. Like, it makes a lot of sense and I really like it. But at the same time, it doesn't make a lot of sense because it's literally not mentioned in the other three books. So it just seems like this whole idea of like a Covey and Lucy Gray and like all these people, it just seems like it comes out of nowhere. I get that it's like 60 years before Katniss, but I think because it's just comes out of seemingly nowhere that I had a hard time placing her in this world. She just felt like she didn't belong, if that makes any sense. And I also think it's just really challenging to do music in books because you don't have the harmony to back it up. You don't have the person's voice. You don't have the instruments. It's literally just lyrics. And reading the lyrics to her songs, as you can imagine, it just like honestly seemed pretty cheeseball, at least to me. I also was really worried about her dress because in the book, obviously it's described as a rainbow dress. People think she looks like a clown. Though I will say, I think what they did in the movie makes sense. It makes sense for her to have a dress that looks like that. It's like pretty obviously makeshift, but it still looks good. She is a performer, so it would make sense for her to have that dress. What I'm like having a lot of trouble with is at the end of the movie, she changes into like at least a few different pretty nice looking dresses. And there's nothing alluding to her being like a good sewer or anything. And it's very clear that she doesn't have any money. So that was another mini detail that just bothered me because clothing, mini tangent, clothing is everything to explaining who a character is. And if you are saying that a character is completely destitute, but they're showing up in makeup and like different dresses in every scene, it can be a very obviously hard to get lost in that. Like I just kept getting like taken out of the story by like the little details. I also think, especially with her wearing makeup, yes, it would make sense for her to wear makeup because she's a performer. Maybe a little bit of like, where is she getting this makeup from? Like, is she making it? Does it come from District 1? Just give me some detail to make Lucy Gray make more sense. There's just like too many loose ends for her to feel like a tangible person to me. And maybe that was actually the point because the ending, which we'll talk about later. So Coriolanus is assigned Lucy Gray Baird, who is from District 12. When she is reaped on her way out to go onto the stage, she pulls out a freaking snake from her dress and she throws it down. This bitch, she throws it down the mayor Lip's daughter, who is named Mayfair Lip. Suzanne, what's going on? Where are you getting these names? She throws a fucking snake down Mayfair's dress. Obviously, she freaks out. When Lucy Gray reaches the stage, Mayor Lip punches her in the face, excuse me. And what does she do? Sing. She gets up and she starts singing, "Can't take my child." It did not slap in the book. It did slap in the movie, I will say. Every song of hers, certified bop. I heard someone call her the Beyonce of District 12. Yes, probably just of all of Pan Am, to be honest. Anyways, Lucy Gray is reaped. So the scene in the book where all of our Capitol students get their tributes, it's very detailed. I believe they go through like every person's reaping scene, at least a little bit. My issue with the film is that they didn't do this. I think they skipped over this part a little bit too quickly. And because they didn't show even a little bit of like the other kids' reaping ceremonies, there was nothing to compare Lucy Gray's reaping to, obviously, besides Katniss's reaping. But I mean, when you're going into the film, you have to expect that most people haven't watched The Hunger Games or haven't watched it recently and that's not fresh in their mind. You need to remind people that like most of these kids are literally just like kids and are terrified. And I think it's because we only see tiny snippets of their faces when they are reaped in the movie that like we just don't care who they are. And Lucy Gray's entrance seems very random. She stands out regardless, but I just think that little like extra added scene could have helped her make more of an impact and like have a spot in the story that made more sense. Coriolanus is given an assignment with Clementia where they're supposed to write up suggestions for the Hunger Games because they're trying to make it so more people will watch. What's his face? Coriolanus writes tons of really good suggestions. He comes up with the idea for sponsors, for betting. But Clementia, you sneaky girl, takes all the credit. But Dr. Gall is like, hey, besties, come into my lab. Let's talk about your project. And Dr. Gall is like, Who wrote it? Because it slaps, because you guys made good suggestions. Who wrote the suggestions? And fucking Clementia is like, I wrote the suggestions. And fucking, sorry I'm cussing so much. Coriolanus is like, no, I fucking wrote the suggestions in his head. But obviously, I mean, he's not gonna rat her out because he knows Dr. Gall is going to get down to the truth. And of course she does. What does she do? She takes them to this giant tank of multicolored snakes. And she goes, yeah, these snakes are poisonous, but not to worry, because if they have your scent, they won't attack you. To which Clementia is like still staying strong for some reason. She's still like, no, it's me. Which girl, the second she told me that, I don't care what the punishment is. I'm not sticking my hand in a vat of snakes. She does it anyway. She obviously gets bit. In the movie, the scene, just boring, just lame. Doesn't make a whole lot of sense why she would even like stick her fucking hand in there, like I just said, because obviously she was gonna get bit. Second of all, I was really upset because in the book, it talks about how she's writhing on the ground and there's like all this multicolored pus spewing out of her. It just was like cooler in the book. They just downplayed it so much. I didn't really love that. I think they could have done it better. In the book, we also get to see the progression of Clementia like getting a little bit more snake-like, and it's just like very spooky and adds like an extra layer of interest. Side note, in the Hunger Games, I didn't realize this, but you know how at the very end, Katniss and Peeta are attacked by those mutts? In the book, the mutts are all the tributes and they've been like repurposed, I guess. Reduce, reuse, recycle. They've literally been like reconfigured into like these very scary, I don't fucking know, dog things. So I do think that it would be more, like why are the movies so hellbent on leaving that part out? Talk about how the fucking capital turns people into weird, deadly animal creatures, okay? I want to hear about it. I like that shit. I like that weird shit. I'm getting off track. What happens next?
Dean Highbottom's entire purpose in this book is to tell Coriolanus that he sucks. Tell him what we're all thinking, girl. In the film and in the book, his character makes no sense to me. I don't understand why you would have someone's entire job to tell the literal villain of the book series that they suck. I do think it was kind of funny though. Like he had some moments in this scene where Coriolanus gets his tributes. I believe Dean Highbottom comes up to him and is like, I see you there in your too tight shoes and you're handing me down shirt and just like absolutely roasts him to a crisp. Dean Highbottom is also addicted to morphine. So Coriolanus this entire time is like, does he hate me? Because I think he came up with some mean nickname for him about the drug use. And he's like, does he hate me because I came up with that nickname? And just a side note, almost like the movie expects its viewers to be stupid. One of my biggest pet peeves is when movie adaptations of books outwardly explain to its audience what is going on instead of showing them. So instead of having Dean Highbottom just simply come in and be like, I notice your shoes are too tight and that's a hand-me-down shirt. I would have so much rather liked if maybe we got a scene of like Coriolanus like walking to school and like showing how the shoes were too tight, like he could be uncomfortable while he's walking. Another thing I really wish that they talked about, hunger is talked about so much throughout this book. It is from his perspective, so he's constantly talking about how hungry he is and every single day he's like strategizing like what he's going to be able to eat, like, and when he's at the university he's like stuffing his face when nobody's looking, putting food in his pockets. Would have been nice if we used a little bit more brains with the costuming too, to really get that point across. Coriolanus goes home and he's like, Tigress, Dean Highbottom hates me and he gave me the shitty tribute. He gave me the stupid girl from District 12. And Tigress is like the only voice of reason besides Sejanus in this entire thing. And she's like, dude, if I just got picked up from my home and got dropped off in the Capitol, like, I would just want someone to pretend even that they cared about me. So Coriolanus takes this advice, but not for the reasons that you would think. Remember how they're super fucking destitute? He wants to bring his family back to its original power more than anything. That's his motivation throughout the entire book. So Coriolanus actually only goes to meet Lucy Greybird and put in an effort in the beginning because whoever tribute wins the Hunger Games wins this plinth prize, which is being donated by Sejanus's father, and that will basically pay for his university, for like everything. So this man's is motivated. His grand man takes care of this beautiful garden of roses on their rooftop, and she barely ever gives the roses out to anyone except for very special occasions. And I believe she gives Corio a rose to meet Lucy Gray, though in the film, I'm pretty sure she just gives him a rose to wear to the reaping ceremony, and he brings that to Lucy. He meets Lucy at the train station. The tributes show up in the worst situation. They've been starving for weeks. They literally came on like a fucking cargo
train.
They are super unwell, okay? Corio meets Lucy Gray, gives her a fucking rose, and Lucy Gray is like, my mom used to bait me better than me picking rose petals.
I don't know how long I just talked without my microphone being on, but I apologize. Why is Lucy Gray Southern? I get that they're not supposed to be from District 12. Was it necessary to make her Southern? I don't think so. I think she stands out enough on her own. The Southern thing just caught me off guard, okay? It's nothing wrong with it. Just caught me off guard. Coriolanus asks the peacekeepers if he can ride with Lucy Gray to where they're going to keep the tributes. Little does he know that they're literally keeping them at the zoo. They dump Lucy Gray, Coriolanus, in like a fucking terrarium where Lucky Flickerman, who was my favorite character in the movie and in the book because he was just such a silly goose. Where Lucky Flickerman is like, why the fuck is there a mentor in the cage? And Coriolanus starts freaking out. He's like, everyone's seeing me right now. I'm on camera. And Lucy Gray goes, own it. Or wait, no, she's Southern, so remember, own it. Coriolanus owns it, and he takes her hand, he walks right up, and he's like, oh, I just wanted to introduce to you all my tribute, Lucy Gray. And of course, she slays, she talks to some babies, she kisses their heads or whatever, and this kind of sparks this whole thing where the other mentors start to try to build relationships with their tributes because they realize that Lucy Gray is getting a lot of screen time, and that could help her chances in winning. So Sejanus, because he knows his tribute Marcus, and remember the tributes haven't eaten in forever, his mother makes all of the tribute sandwiches. I also wish that they included more of Sejanus's mom in the movie because it's really important to know that like the reason why Sejanus is so kind is because his mom, why am I getting emotional? I didn't even really like this book that much, but his mom is like really cute and sweet. And so he just wants to be like his mom. And so he takes his mom's sandwiches and he tries to give them to the tributes. He tries to give them to Marcus. Marcus refuses because I kind of would too if like my classmate was like mentoring me to go die. But I think eventually he's able to feed like all of the tributes. Coriolanus sneaks what little food he has in to see Lucy Gray. And while Lucy Gray's eating it, she can notice that Coriolanus is also starving. And I think that this is the one scene that we get in the film where we actually see that Coriolanus is starving. And he sits down and eats with Lucy Gray, and I actually really like that scene. And I don't think that it is in this exact moment, but I believe at the end of this scene, he really sees Lucy Gray as more of an equal because he realizes that they're truly both just like at the mercy of the Capitol, and they're both like barely alive, like can't even get their basic needs. And I think that this is where in the book he starts to kind of fall for her, but in a creepy way. Like, it's important to note that this man is fucked up in the book. He is gross. He talks about her in a very possessive way, calling her my girl and mine, and it's just, It's gross. So at one point, the other tributes start coming. They take after Sejanus and try to feed their tributes. Arachne Crane, who you remember is a C-U-N-T, brings some food in like a bottle to her tribute. Who is it? Brandy. But while she's taunting Brandy, she's literally like putting the food and like taking it out so she can't get it. Brandy obviously gets a hold of like a glass bottle. The book gets a knife and she slits Arachne's throat, and Arachne dies in Coriolanus's arms. Oh, another death. Why did I say that like it's a good thing? Where did my dead pen go?
Aha.
She's gone. Oh, also Brandy dies. It's probably obvious, I don't know. So I'm just going to fast forward a little bit. Eventually, the mentors are allowed to take their tributes to go toward the arena. The arena is in this old arena. I don't fucking know what, where the capital used to put on hangings or something. Ugh, the arena was like another big issue for me because I think part of like the fun of the Hunger Games is it's like survival in the woods. I was really bored by all of this taking place in like just a boring sports arena. While they're touring the arena, a bomb goes off. It was like a rebel bombing, I guess, to show everyone on live TV that they don't approve of the games. We lose a bunch of tributes. Otto and Ginny from District 6. Two other mentors named Apollo and Diana Ring. Fawcett and Velverine die because they try to escape. Oh, Sabine also tried to escape. Marcus does escape, but we're going to get to that later. And they don't die right away, but Panlo and Sheaf die from their injuries later. I don't know why I'm laughing, it's not funny. And then I believe two other mentors, Gaius and Breen. And this is a big deal. I can't remember who exactly like was the biggest deal, but they use this as just more of an excuse, Dr. Gall at least, to carry on the games, which I think is just very ironic because she's like, you killed one of our children, grrr. Meanwhile, they're just like murdering dozens of children every year. I like make it make sense, I don't know. We're going to fast forward again to the beginning of the games. Coriolanus, right before Lucy Gray gets in, at this point in time, I also should mention they are in love, they have smooched, though in the movie, they refrain from showing their smooch, which made me really upset because I think it was really important. But whatever, I guess. So Coriolanus not only really wants to win, but he also does care about her to some extent. He gives his mom, Mrs. Snow's old compact, which he tells her to fill up with rat poison. And he goes, remember the vat of snakes? He goes and he puts one of his handkerchiefs that he used to wipe Lucy Gray's tears, and he throws that in the vat of snakes so that the snakes get Lucy Gray's scent and they are now trained to not kill Lucy Gray. So Coriolanus discusses strategy with Lucy Gray. Now that the arena has been completely blown up, it's opened up some spots underground. So he tells her to go underground. Now, in the book, we see Lucy Gray immediately run underground, and I believe Jessup, the other tribute from her group just finds her. However, in the movie, I do like this change. They made Lucy Gray immediately try to find Jessup, and she gets caught and like almost killed. Being an idiot, I would sprint, like I would not save Jessup. Jessup is also already clearly suffering from rabies at this point, which is another thing, but anyways, in the book, we do not see her for like the first week or so of the games, because there's not cameras in the book anywhere except for like in the main part of the arena. Also important to note, as soon as the games open, they show that they've captured Marcus. Remember, he tried to run away, but they've basically like crucified him. Like fucking gnarly, gross. Also side note, when I was like watching and reading The Hunger Games when I was 12 years old, for some reason I was like, kids dying? Oh. Now I'm 22 and I just witnessed like all of these children get murdered in horrific ways. And I was like fighting to stay in my seat in the theater because I genuinely found it extremely disturbing. I don't know if that's showing maturity or what. Marcus is shown, and when Sejanus sees this, he's like, monsters! And he runs out in like a very cunty sleigh exit, stands Sejanus. Very shortly into the games, one of the girls, I believe, I don't know who it was, one of the girls goes and kills Marcus and puts him out of his misery. So there he goes. So the games continue. Children are being murdered. Sejanus sneaks into the arena in the middle of the freaking night to go and place breadcrumbs. What? To put breadcrumbs under Marcus's on Marcus's body, because I guess that's what they do in District 2. Dr. Gall goes to Coriolanus. He's like, your fucking friend is in the arena. She doesn't say that, but she's like, your friend's in the arena, bestie. But you need to go and get him, because if I send in peacekeepers, he's going to run away, and that might cause more havoc. And we can't have anyone knowing that a student got into the games. Everyone from the outside thinks that these two are like besties. Coriolanus goes in and he's like, bestie, Sejanus, can you not be in here? Because I'm gonna be in here too until you leave, and I would rather not die because I want to give my family back to the top of the class hierarchy. And Sejanus is like, blah, 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 blah. When one of the tributes obviously starts chasing them down, and Coriolanus ends up killing the tribute. I need to look up which tribute he killed. Hang on. Bobbin. So this kid named Bobbin, who I kind of stand Bobbin in the film. He slays, but he was literally slayed. He dies. Very sad. Sejanus and Coriolanus make it out just in time. Now, fast forwarding a little bit more to Lucy Gray and Jessup, they're cruising underground when all of a sudden, it's very clear that Jessup legitimately has rabies and starts to chase Lucy Gray. And in the book, this is the first time that we see her come out. I think that, yeah, he chases her to the top of the beam. It happens very similarly to how it happens in the film. Coriolanus then realizes that people that have rabies are scared of water. So he sends in water. This like breaks near Jessup, scares him, and Jessup falls and dies. A funny detail that I actually really liked in the film was how they made the drones super faulty, because it's the first time that they're doing sponsorships. I don't remember if they mentioned that in the book, but I did like that the drones served as weapons. I thought that was kind of funny. Also, just the fact that like Lucky Flickerman said the most disgusting thing after every child was literally brutally murdered was just kind of a slay, I don't know. Lucy Gray watches Jessup die. She's very traumatized. At this point in time, a bunch of the other tributes that are still alive start to chase down Lucy Gray. They've had it out for her from the start because obviously she slayed the Capitol. She is able to find a good hiding spot in an air vent, and she closes it so that they can't get to her. And while she's hiding from the tributes, she decides to take the rat poison and start to poison their water. She poisons one water and she starts to dump out the rest of them. Now, in the movie, Dill, who is alongside Reaper from District 11, drinks the water and dies. In the book, I thought it was done better. Wolvie, who is supposed to be like our Rue, it's mentioned that Wolvie reminds Lucy Gray of her cousin, Maud Ivory. Wolvie drinks the water and dies. I was just confused why they would switch this death to Dill. Yes, that prompts Reaper's whole situation, which we're going to get to next. But I think if she had poisoned Wolvie, it would have made more sense. And because she does so in the book, this is the beginning of where Coriolanus starts to mistrust her. He also mistrusts her because killing Dill, she's obviously a very little girl too, but because she has tuberculosis, everyone just thinks that she dies from tuberculosis and not from the rat poison. Because Lucy Gray's hiding in the vents, oh, I should cross off Dill's name. But it's confusing because if we're talking about the book, we're gonna cross off Wolvie, but if we're talking about the movie, we're crossing off Dill. I'm just gonna stay true to the movie because it's the last thing that I watched. So Lucy Gray is being chased throughout the vents by all of these other guys, and Lucy Gray decides to open up her rat poison compact. She drops it through the vents. This gets onto Treach, I believe, and he dies. Good night. And it's this point where, yes, Dill, he had TB, but like, why is Treach dying? Like, what's going on? Oh, I literally forgot this whole part. Okay, so in the movie, I forget exactly how this all happens in the book, but in the movie, when Dill passes away, Reaper loses his mind. I like what they did with Reaper in the movie, I will say. I didn't really understand him. I didn't really think he served a purpose in the book. In the film, opposite. I think he slayed the house. He was like, he had a Katniss moment where his tribute Dill, who is also a little girl, dies, and to protest that, he covers all the dead tributes alongside her with Pan Am's flag. I read this as more of like him just being extremely aggressive and like wanting to show the amount of people that he'd killed. But in the movie, it's very clear that it's him saying something against the Capitol. I don't know if I'm just like stupid, but this is a rare occasion where it turned out better in the film than it did in the book. So now we're in the finale. Definitely some of these other people have died, but I don't really know who. This is when Dr. Gall makes her final move and she drops the snake tank into the arena. This is also the first time that they've used mutts in the games, so this makes a lot of people tune in. The snakes immediately murder Wolvie in the movie. It was fucking sad. She comes out and she's like, can we go home now? And then just gets destroyed by snakes. Worst fear in the world. I hope it was fast. That made me cry. Reaper, dead. Probably this guy's dead. Probably Lamina's dead. Probably these guys are dead. That guy's definitely dead. These guys are dead. Fucking Coral is this fucking bitch the whole time. That's so annoying. She's like the only other person that I actually like have a memory of. Dead. This leaves us with just Lucy Gray, who obviously doesn't die because Coriolanus put his fucking handkerchief with her smell in the snake tank. In this, like, okay, in the fucking whatever, she sings to the snakes. And here's my qualm. Number one, does singing to snakes actually calm them down? And number two, I think that's it, because I just thought it was kind of cheesy, to be quite honest with you, both in the book and in the film. Rachel Zegler, holy cow, or Ziegler, whatever. Oh my God, amazing singer, amazing actress, most beautiful, amazing person. I think she looks wonderful. I don't know her, but she seems wonderful. However, the girl is a musical theater girly, you can tell, and she belts. But my issue with her singing in like such a musical style is, again, my issue with the character in general, where she feels so out of place. It wouldn't be so out of place for her to sing, yes, but for her to belt, bitch, I don't care if I'm like a fucking snake girl. If there are a million snakes on me, I will not be singing with a clear, nice voice. And also, she just witnessed a bunch of kids getting murdered, so I would have think it would have hit the audience a lot harder how it was supposed to if she's like sitting there and like sobbing, just kind of sounds like shit a little bit. I know she sang all this live, but you can tell that it is, at the end of the day, a real performance, like not even a performance in the sense that this whole movie book is trying to make. It's very obviously a performance, and so that scene lost its impact on me personally. That's just my opinion. Okay, moving on. Coriolanus is like, fuck yeah, we won the game, slay the house. He comes out. Dean Highbottom has the fucking compact and the fucking handkerchief on a table, and he's just like, you're gonna go be a peacekeeper because you committed treason, because you cheat. And Coriolanus is like not that angry about it for some reason. I think because he's so calculating and manipulative that he knows he can get out of this one. I think in his head he's more just like, well, it's just gonna be temporary. And he gets assigned to District 8, but he's obviously kind of in love with Lucy Gray. So he decides to bribe them to get to District 12. Now, if you remember, Lucy Gray is famous in District 12 for singing for the peacekeepers. So of course, on one of Coriolanus's first nights, he gets taken to one of her performances. They reunite. It's really cute. In the movie, I don't think they did a very good job with their reuniting. I think it was just like a little bit too fast, but I also get needing to squish a book into a movie. So, you know, you gotta cut out some shit. It is revealed to Coriolanus that Lucy Gray Baird has had a recent breakup with this man named Billy Tope, who is cheating on her with, if you remember from the beginning, Mayfair, the mayor's daughter. She's the girl who Lucy Gray put the snake down her dress. Billy Tope is having an affair with Mayfair, and he's no longer a part of the Covey. Billy Tope, to be quite honest with you, this whole part of the book with all the different rebel shit just confuses me, and I'm not going to explain it well, and if you want someone else to explain it to you, I'd recommend that, or just go read it, I don't know. Billy Tope starts like a mini riot, and everyone's throwing punches, they all escape, everything's fine. However, fast forward, oh, I forgot to tell you! Sejanus also becomes a peacekeeper, because he was punished for going into the arena, and they get sent to the same place. So now they can be besties in District 12. But Coriolanus, who already doesn't love Sejanus, is starting to get hella suspicious of Sejanus because this is taking so long, dude. Because Sejanus is talking to Billy Tope, who we know from Lucy Gray is a rebel. And what does Coriolanus hate more than anything else? Rebels. So he starts being like, I'm just gonna keep an eye on Sejanus. Like, it's just kind of suspicious. Now, one of Lucy Gray and the Covey's performances, Lucy Gray sings the song for him, saying that he's pure as the driven snow, which I think is very funny because it's obviously not true. Coriolanus sees Sejanus sneak off with Mayfair, Billy Tope, and I think one other person, I honestly don't know. Coriolanus obviously follows Sejanus. In the film, Lucy Gray runs after him. I don't remember if she runs after him and like witnesses this in the book. For some reason, there's an argument. For some reason, he kills the mayor's daughter. Does Billy Tope also die at the same time? Yeah, someone kills Billy, what? Is that true? Yeah, no, wait, now I'm getting really confused. Now my brain is hurting. No, I actually really don't know what happens. Billy Tope dies?
Yeah.
He gets shot in the room?
He gets shot, yeah.
By who?
Just one of the guys.
Just like a random...
I think it was just like some random kid or something.
He shoots... I don't fucking know, but at some point Billy Tope also dies. Coriolanus, Lucy Gray Bird, freak the fuck out because obviously she's the one that put the snake down her dress in the first place. The mayor's probably going to assume it was her. So Lucy Gray comes to Coriolanus and she's like, we need to leave right now. Meet me at the hanging tree. Oh, okay, one second, we're backing up. When Coriolanus first gets to District 12, he has to oversee this hanging of this random guy. And before he dies, calls out to this girl in the crowd who's like, no, no, don't kill him. And he's like, run, Lil, run. And then he dies. And I have that stuck in my head because it's repeated, because the Jabberjays repeat his words over and over again when he dies, which I thought was like a really spooky, cool detail. Pop off Suzanne. This triggers Sejanus, obviously. And this is why Sejanus conspires with the rebels and with Billy Tope to get this girl, Lil, out of jail where she's going to get executed. And I think Mayfair is involved as well. This is why they all get murdered. This is why all the drama happens. Coriolanus has a conversation with Sejanus and he's like, bestie, I see you sneaking around. Just like, what the fuck's happening? You need to tell me. And he's like, okay. And he tells him, while they're working on this Jabberjay project, if you remember, Jabberjays were this tool used by the Capitol. They record your voice and say it back to you. So, my brain breaking. Coriolanus presses record on the Jabberjay, records Sejanus's fucking confession, sends it to Dr. Gall. We will figure out what happens later. But do you remember that guy that got hung in like that whole situation? So, ha! Did you ever wonder what the song The Hanging Tree is referring to? That's what it's referring to. I wondered too. And guess what? Lucy Gray witnessed it and she wrote that song and she sang it. I don't know why I'm being so sassy, I'm sorry. Lucy is like, we need to run away though because I'm gonna get caught. Corio's like, sure thing, babe. Let's meet at the Hanging Tree. they meet at the Hanging Tree. They run into the woods. Oh wait, I forgot to cross off Billy Tope and Mayfair. They die. Dead. I keep getting ahead of myself. Before they can even make these plans to run away, remember how Corio ratted on Sejanus? Sejanus is hung and killed. And I think that it's because he's killed that really makes Lucy think that she needs to run away. It's sad. No, I can't believe I skipped over that. No, this part's fucked. It's really fucked up that Sejanus died. I was pissed off. Another really fucked up part of his death, his last word, he literally calls out, Mom. And that's like echoed with the Jabberjays. Even when I read that, I was like, but when I saw it, oh, it's like, it makes me emotional because you forget that like these characters are all 18 years old, like they're babies. Coriolanus and Lucy Gray begin their journey to escape and they go to this river that Lucy Gray has shown Coriolanus, which fun fact, in the first Hunger Games book, Katniss talks about a lake outside of District 12 that her dad used to take her to dig up Katniss roots. I think they're called like swamp potato, but they call them Katniss, and that's why her dad named her Katniss. And I thought that this was actually like a really cute connection. And there's a lot of theories that Lucy Gray is related to Katniss. To me, this confirms it. Even if they're not blood related, I think it's definitely true that her dad comes from the Covey or has a relative that was in the Covey. The Covey was disbanded. Music was banned in District 12. But even in the first Hunger Games book, it's mentioned how much her dad loved to sing and how much she loved to sing. They do kind of gloss over that in the movies. But if they had maybe focused on it a little bit more, it would make a little bit more sense why we get a musical character in the prequel. But it's very clear that Suzanne is trying to say, hey, this girl is related to Katniss in some way. I don't know if it's her grandma, I don't think so. I personally just think that her dad's dad or dad's grandpa was probably a member of the Covey. Or Lucy Gray got away and had kids. Coriolanus and Lucy run to this lake. On the way there, Coriolanus somehow brings up the fact that he's killed 3 people. So if you remember, Lucy Gray is only aware of the fact that he killed Bobbin in the arena and that he killed Mayfair. So she's like, who the fuck's the third? She's not stupid. It's very clear that Sejanus just got murdered. Who else could have possibly ratted him out? She puts 2 and 2 together. Coriolanus tries to save it by being like, myself. I killed myself. My old self to be with you, babe. I love you so much. Definition of male manipulator. It's so bad. He's like my ex. When they get to the cabin, they find the guns that Coriolanus used to kill Mayfair. Now, the only reason why Coriolanus decided to run away with Lucy Gray in the first place was he knew if these guns were discovered, he would get murdered just like Sejanus. Because he now has the guns, all he has to do is destroy them and then he can get back to the capital. Obviously, Lucy Gray sees that he has the guns. She's like, oh fuck, I'm the only loose end now. She even says it. And girl, she was smart with this one. She very calmly goes like, I'm gonna go pick some Katniss. And he's like, isn't it too early for Katniss? Which is another silly little foreshadowing, because get it, too early for Katniss. Like, she's like, no babe, it's fine. She goes to pick her Katniss. She takes just a knife with her. In the movie, it seems very random. It seems very sudden, the progression of Coriolanus going to, we're good and I love her, to like, I'm gonna fucking kill this bitch. But in the book, it's very slow. She leaves and he starts to realize it's too early for Katniss. It's raining. Oh, she has a knife with her. Oh, she killed an innocent in the arena. She's a victor. She's not an innocent. So he goes through this spiral and he decides all at once that Lucy Gray needs to get eradicated. Another important thing to note is that Tigress and the Grand Mam have also lost their house. So Coriolanus is freaking out. He's like, more than ever, I need to get back to them and help them. Only more reason to get rid of Lucy Gray. So he goes out into the woods with the fucking rifle. While he's walking, there's like some inner dialogue where he's like, I don't think I'm gonna kill her. Like, I don't think I'm gonna hurt her. Like, I'm not gonna hurt her. But then he's also like, but then why do I have this gun? So like, even he knows he doesn't have the best of intentions. While he's going out, he finds Lucy Gray's scarf that she was wearing earlier. And when he lifts it up, there's a fucking snake. I hate snakes. And the snake bites him. And he automatically assumes that it's a poisonous snake. He starts freaking out. He waits to die. He's like, Lucy Gray, you're trying to kill me. You're trying to kill me. After a few minutes, it's pretty obvious that it's not a poisonous snake. And he's like, oh, she's just trying to distract me to get away. At that moment, Lucy Gray starts to sing. I'm going to give her a little crown because she won. Lucy Gray starts singing, and if you remember, there's mockingjays in District 12. They don't repeat exact words, they repeat melodies. So all at once, all these birds start singing. And it's important to note that Coriolanus has always hated these birds. Like, he just like is such a city boy. He hates the country, okay? He hates the birds. Now, this is something that they didn't do in the film that it's making my blood boil. In the book, Coriolanus at this point in time so overstimulated by the birds. He can hear her singing near him. So he gets his gun and he goes in a circle like level like this. And he goes boop, 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 boop. Boop, those are gunshots. You see where I'm holding it? Because it's like level to another person, it's like kind of hinted that he killed her. I don't know how you would survive a whole spray of bullets coming at you from all directions. So that adds to the mystery of like, did she get away? Is she Katniss's grandma? What's going on? But in the fucking movie, oh, it makes me so mad, I'm sorry. In the movie, they have him shoot upwards at the birds. So he does like this. I don't know why I showed you twice. The issue I have with this, it's very clear in the movie that there's no way in hell he could have hit Lucy Gray. So it takes away some of the mystery, which I thought was the whole point. So now I'm just confused why the people in the movie would decide to do that. Two questions for people in the movie. Why would you kill Dill instead of Wovey? And why would you have him shoot at an upwards angle? That, and why wouldn't you have them kiss when they're supposed to kiss? I don't understand. It just like, that's it. That's the end, I'm pretty sure. No, it's not. It's not the end. Oh my God. Okay. Coriolanus gets back to the Capitol. Dr. Gall's like, you're my star pupil. Thank you for betraying and getting your best friend murdered. You can study under me. I love your ideas about the Hunger Games. Let's make them the worst thing that they could possibly ever be. And then Coriolanus has a meeting with Dean Highbottom. And at the end of it, he poisons his morphling, his drugs that he's addicted to. So now Dean Highbottom joins our besties in the other world. He dies. Coriolanus then gets adopted by the Plinth family. And I don't think that they talked about that in the movie, which doesn't make any sense because it really makes this whole Sejanus Coriolanus thing go full circle. And it shows you how fucking evil he is, that he is willing to take this kid who he literally killed Spot with his parents. But now that he's under the Plinths, Grandmam is fine. Tigress is fine. He's rich and powerful again. And we obviously know that he becomes the president. And in the movie, it ends with a shot of him staring at the Pan Am statue. And I actually loved how they like did a little rainbow on her dress part because it's supposed to look like Lucy Gray. And it makes sense because the whole figment of Lucy Gray is like, she's related to the Mockingjay, she's related to singing, and that comes back obviously to bite him later in the Hunger Games. Yay! We finished! That was so much of my life that I just spent talking about this. I hope that you enjoyed it as much as I did. Thank you for watching. Let me know if you liked this. I can do more unhinged shit like this. I think it's more fun than always talking about mental health. So anyways, I love you. Thank you for watching. If you could leave me a rating, if you're watching this on a Spotify platform, that would be helpful. If you're watching this on YouTube, please subscribe, please like, please comment, please interact with me. I would appreciate it. And I love you, and I hope you're having a good day, and may the odds be ever in your favor.